Wishing you a very wonderful.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Berman. Brazilian football icon Pelé has died at the age of 82. Pelé was widely regarded as the greatest player of all time. He was the only footballer in history to have won 3 World Cups, and he scored more than 1,000 goals. His daughter wrote on Instagram, "Everything we are is thanks to you. We love you infinitely. Rest in peace." The hospital treating Pelé in Brazil said in a statement that his death after a long battle with cancer was caused by multiple organ failure. Reaction instantly began flowing in, with current Brazilian star Neymar saying Pelé had transformed football into an art. Pelé's reign extended beyond the pitch, with gigs as a movie star, singer, and later sports minister in the 1990s, one of the first black cabinet members in Brazil. The Vatican has announced that Pope Emeritus Benedict is described as lucid, conscious, and stable, but that his health condition remains serious. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Pope Francis revealed that Benedict was very ill and had gone to see him at his home in the Vatican Gardens, where he has lived since retiring in 2013. Benedict was the first pope to do so in 600 years. Amidst the bustle of St. Peter's Square, Vatican visitor Anna Marca wished him well. "I think by now he has lived about long enough, poor thing. And since he's sick, he's not well. If God wishes, he will take him away." Vatican expert Massimo Franco says it is hard to tell the exact condition of the retired pontiff.
"When you are 95, of course you can die in each moment."
I'm Karen Chamas.
And Kosovo reopened its biggest border crossing with Serbia on Thursday, easing a surge in tensions that has alarmed world powers. This is VOA News. In world headlines today, Benjamin Netanyahu was sworn in as Israel's prime minister again on Thursday in a comeback for the political veteran. At least 19 people were killed after a huge fire tore through a casino hotel complex in a Cambodian town on the Thai border, officials said on Thursday. Russian President Vladimir Putin will speak with Chinese President Xi Jinping via video link on Friday to discuss bilateral and regional issues. That's according to the Kremlin. The U.S. State Department has approved the sale of an anti-tank mine-laying system to Taiwan as tensions rise with China. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The State Department also confirmed the cost of the volcano system would be around $180 million. The equipment scatters anti-tank and anti-personnel mines from a ground vehicle, something the U.S. believes Taiwan needs to deter a Chinese invasion. The rising threat from China was displayed recently when it sent 71 planes and 7 ships towards Taiwan in a 24-hour period. China sees the self-ruling island as part of its own territory, with its top leaders stating that the island has no choice but to accept eventual Chinese rule. I'm Karen Chamas.
In the United States, applications for U.S. unemployment aid rose slightly last week. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Another 9,000 people applied for unemployment benefits last week, bringing the total to 225,000. The 4-week average, which evens out some of the weekly swings, finds the number just about flat from the prior period at 221,000. Unemployment applications are viewed as a proxy for layoffs. These latest numbers from the Labor Department show the job market remains strong, despite the Federal Reserve's efforts to cool the economy and hiring. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
And in the Big Apple, New York City, entertainers get ready for New Year's Eve, which is this Saturday. Media personality Ryan Seacrest is preparing for his 19th year as host of ABC TV's New Year's Eve coverage. The AP's Margie Zaraleta has more.
Duran Duran, New Edition, and J-Hope of BTS are among the stars who will perform in New York's Times Square for ABC's New Year's Rockin' Eve. Ryan Seacrest will host with YouTube personality Liza Koshy. Seacrest says he's predicting big crowds and something to go wrong.
Live television is all about the unexpected. We all have unexpected moments unfold on live TV, and it's interesting. We don't know what's coming a lot on our show.
I'm Archie Zaraleta.
And I'm Laurel Beman for VOA News.
Today is Friday, December 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, explosions rain down on several parts of Ukraine Thursday as Russia launches one of its biggest strikes since its invasion began.
I went to sleep in my room, but wanted to watch the television, so I fell asleep. I woke up to everything shaking, crumbling.
A woman in Kabul describes what she calls a nightmare for women in the Afghan capital since the Taliban imposed its ban on women and girls heading to schools or working with NGOs.
Very bad dream for us, a bad situation for us. We lost all the laws, our all goals.
And one of the greatest soccer players of all time has died. We'll have these stories and more next. Russia fired scores of cruise missiles into Ukraine early on Thursday, targeting Kyiv, the northeastern city of Kharkiv, and other cities in a massive aerial bombardment that sent people rushing to shelters and knocked out power. Ukrainian authorities say the strikes appeared to be aimed at its energy grid. Reuters correspondent Ed Barron reports.
Russia fired scores of missiles into Ukraine early on Thursday, targeting Kyiv, the northeastern city of Kharkiv, and other cities in a massive aerial bombardment that knocked out power, Ukrainian authorities said. In Kyiv, a team of emergency workers searched through the smoldering wreckage of a residential house destroyed by a blast. Ukraine's military said it shot down 54 missiles out of 69 launched by Russia in an attack that began at 7 a.m. local time. Air raid sirens rang out across the country and in Kyiv sounded for 5 hours, one of the longest alarms of the war. Russia has mounted numerous waves of airstrikes in recent months on Ukrainian critical infrastructure, leaving millions without power and heat in freezing temperatures. The latest blitz came hard on the heels of the Kremlin's rejection of a Ukrainian peace plan, insisting that Kyiv must accept Russia's annexation of 4 Ukrainian regions. Homes were destroyed near Zaporizhia.
I went to sleep in my room, but wanted to watch the television, so I fell asleep. I woke up to everything shaking, crumbling. I got up and screamed to my husband, "Where are you?" I ran barefoot on glass. He appeared and glass was falling on him.
Moscow has repeatedly denied targeting civilians, but Ukraine says its daily bombardment is destroying cities, towns, and the country's power, medical, and other infrastructure. Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th in what President Vladimir Putin calls a special military operation to demilitarize its neighbor. Kyiv and its Western allies have denounced Russia's actions as an imperialist-style land grab.
That was Reuters correspondent Ed Barron. Recent Russian, Belarusian military exercises have raised fears of a second invasion of Ukraine from the north. While Ukrainians see Belarus as an aggressor, some observers and members of the Belarusian opposition say that not all Belarusians side with Russia. In fact, some Belarusians decided to prove their allegiance to Ukraine by joining its army. Miroslava Gangadze met with members of a Belarusian regiment before they were sent to the front lines.
Belarusians have been one of the most prominent contingents of foreign fighters in Ukraine. Belarusian volunteers, foes of President Alexander Lukashenko's regime, have been fighting alongside Ukrainian forces since 2014. When Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th, hundreds of Belarusians decided to join the fight and form what eventually became the Kostyuskalinovsky Regiment, named after a Belarusian writer and revolutionary who initiated an uprising against the Russian Empire in 1863. The volunteer regiment consists of a few hundred fighters. Many in the regiment use nicknames for fear of retaliation against themselves and their families. Its leaders believe their role is to help Ukraine fight for its freedom.
Belarusians who think that Ukraine is suffering, they come here and take up arms. They, by action, show that Ukraine needs help here and now. The guys who join our regiment believe that Ukraine should be free from Putin's aggression and that Belarus should be free from Putin's and Lukashenko's aggression. So I believe this is the base of the new Belarusian army.
Denis Kit, who served in the Ukrainian Azov battalion from 2015 to 2016, said that by standing with Ukrainians, they are not only helping Ukraine, but also fighting for freedom for their own country, which, although independent, is a close ally of Russia.
Belarus is occupied. The culture is destroyed. The language is destroyed. With our unit, we are trying to rebuild the culture and the language. And the main thing we would like to show is that true Belarusians exist, a lot of them. They are here, they are helping.
Russian Federation, Putin and his footman, Lukashenko, stole our country, our independence.
The soldier, who goes by the nickname Mirek, speaks from experience. He served in the Belarusian Interior Ministry forces until the protest movement in 2020. After the bloody crackdown on the protest, he realized he could not serve Lukashenko's government anymore. Now, he is with Kalinowski's regiment, preparing to go to the front line. A Lithuanian military trainer nicknamed Ziggy is pushing the soldiers in the field, ensuring they are ready for real battle. He says he is here to avenge his family's suffering under the Russians.
My grandparents was occupied by Russians and was sent to the Gulag in Siberia. And now I have in real time a chance with my hands to pay them back. So it's my war, definitely, for my family, for my neighbors and everybody, because this war come to our doors. If not now, maybe later. We have a chance now. Just stop him here.
As for now, many regiment fighters believe that a Ukrainian victory will eventually lead to a Belarus free of Russian influence. Miroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Ukraine.
Even before the Taliban issued a decree banning Afghan women from working at non-governmental organizations or NGOs, Taliban forces often visited local NGOs in the capital, Kabul, to make sure women were obeying the dress code. But on Saturday, the Taliban went further and excluded women from NGOs, claiming they were not wearing the hijab correctly. The move has prompted international aid agencies to immediately end operations in Afghanistan. It's also raising the fear that millions of Afghans will go without food, education, or health care, which could be particularly tough during winter months. One woman in Kabul named Husna, we're not using her last name to protect Husna and her family, says it's been a nightmare. Husna describes to me what it was like the day the ban went into effect on women and girls attending schools and women like herself who work at NGOs.
Really a tragedy when they announced that girls cannot go to the school, that girls cannot go to university. It was a nightmare. It's like we don't want you to do this or have a wish or have goals. So it was very, very a bad dream for us, a bad situation for us. We lost all. We lost our all goals in our life. You know, we were like they do not allow us to live in our own country.
The day that it happened, what exactly was it like for you? Were you trying to go to work or were you trying to go to school? What happened?
I was going to my work because I was working in a humanitarian and development network. So the day that the Taliban tell us that girls cannot go to the work, it was I was like I said that I should go to the work because I'm the in our family we are about 10 members in our family. So I was the one who have work. Father does not have work. My brothers also, they are all in university, but I was the only one that have a job for myself, and all of the you know, the financial support, I was the only one that can support my family in financial support. So
it was very difficult.
It was like a nightmare. you know, Madam. And I say that, no, I want to go. I want to go and I want to see that what will happen if I go to the office. When I was in the way of office, some soldiers asked me that, where are you going? And I tell them that I want to go to the city. They said that it's not allowed because I know that you are going to somewhere else. You are going to the office or you are going to other place. So it's not allowed. And they asked me that, where is your mahram? Why you are going without your mahram to a city? And that day was very hard for me, and that it was a very tough situation for me. And I was crying, and they said that, go back to your home. And I'm
so sorry. I know this must be difficult to describe and what happened to you. Okay. Is there any reasons for you to be allowed under the Taliban rule to go outside?
They just say that you can go to the city or other places just when you have a necessary work to do, like if you are sick or if you should go to the city for shopping, then you have to go with your mahrams, with your brothers or fathers or husbands. Otherwise, you are not allowed to go anywhere. And I don't know why they do this, why they are enemy of girls, they are enemy of women. They do not want to, women, they do not allow the women to live in Afghanistan, in my country.
That was Husna, who was a former NGO worker in Afghanistan until last Saturday. She was speaking to me on Thursday from Kabul. You're listening to VOA News. Former Pope Benedict XVI is lucid, conscious, and stable, but his condition remains serious. That's according to a Vatican statement on Thursday, one day after it revealed that his health had deteriorated recently. Associated Press correspondent Karen Chalmers has more.
Pope Francis revealed that Benedict was very ill and had gone to see him at his home in the Vatican Gardens, where he has lived since retiring in 2013. Benedict was the first pope to do so in 600 years. Amidst the bustle of St. Peter's Square, Vatican visitor Anna Malka wished him well. I think by now he has lived about long enough, poor thing. And since he's sick, he's not well. If God wishes, he will take him away. Vatican expert Massimo Franco says it is hard to tell the exact condition of the retired pontiff.
When you are 95, of course you can die in each moment.
I'm Karen Chamas.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. Next up, Speaker of the House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi is stepping aside in 2023 to make way for a new generation of Democratic leaders in recognition of one of the most influential female politicians in U.S. history. We reprise a conversation with Molly Ball about her book Pelosi, The Life and Legacy of Nancy Pelosi, next this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Fatima bin Ismail, a 19-year-old Rohingya woman, is one of more than 170 refugees who made a perilous journey in a rickety boat across the Indian Ocean from her home in Bangladesh to Indonesia. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson has her story.
Crying tears of relief, Rohingya refugee Fatima bin Ismail makes a video call to her family to let them know she's safe. The 19-year-old has just completed a traumatic 40-day voyage from Bangladesh to Indonesia in a leaky boat. She was one of hundreds of refugees fleeing poverty and persecution to attempt the crossing this week. At least 20 people died on the way. Fatima remembers how some passengers leapt into the water, fearing the boat would sink. Others couldn't cope with the hunger.
After a few days, people started jumping from the boat to the sea. Some five men wanted to find other boats around. We don't know where they went. Then after a few days, five men jumped because they couldn't handle the hunger. Then after 12 days, water started coming into the boat. And more people jumped because they feared the boat would sink in the ocean. There were bodies floating in the water.
The Rohingya are a Muslim people from mainly Buddhist Myanmar, where they have long suffered repression.
Since a crackdown by the country's military in 2017, around 800,000 have been forced into Bangladesh. While they may have found safety there, their living conditions in the refugee camps have become desperate. Rights groups have recorded a major rise in the number of Rohingya leaving the camps, from about 500 in 2021 to some 2,400 this year. Many now want to reach the Muslim-majority countries of Indonesia or Malaysia. But not all are as successful as Fatima. The UN says 2022 could be one of the deadliest years at sea in almost a decade for the Rohingya.
Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters. Italy's right-wing government has approved new measures restricting the procedures of NGO ships that rescue migrants at sea. Reuters says a new cabinet decree states that boats bringing aboard stranded migrants should request a boat aported Europe and sail it to there without delay, rather than continue looking for others in distress. Rescue ships now stay in the Mediterranean for several days and often pick up hundreds of migrants before docking. Tunisia's President Kais Saied on Thursday downplayed the extremely low turnout in this month's parliamentary elections and lashed out at his critics. A little more than 11% of registered voters took part in the vote, 2 points higher than initially estimated by the French news agency AFP. 46 soldiers from Ivory Coast were tried by a court of appeal in Mali on Thursday. The military government in Bamako, who said they are mercenaries, arrested the troops in July as they arrived at the airport to back up a German contingent of UN peacekeepers. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam. Pelé, Brazil's king of the so-called beautiful game, has died. Pelé won 3 World Cups and became the first global icon of sports. Associated Press sports reporter Ricardo Zunigo remembers the man who some say was the greatest soccer player ever.
An edge over everybody else, not because they're faster or they're stronger, but because they have a way of seeing the game differently from everybody else. He won his first World Cup in 1958 when he was just 17. So he already was playing against grown-up men. He was definitely very fast. He was strong. Combined with that, the mental skill is what made him so great.
Pelé was admitted to a hospital in Sao Paulo in late November for a respiratory infection and for complications that are related to colon cancer. Last week, the hospital said his health had worsened. Pelé died Thursday at the age of 82. Making New Year's resolutions is easy and appealing as a way to break the past and make a fresh start. Following through on them month after month is the hard part, as we hear from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
A new year is around the corner, and many use this time to make New Year's resolutions. Why do people do that, you might ask?
It's a new calendar year. We have a chance to leave behind all of the old stuff, good and bad, from the previous year and move forward and start to make new plans, new goals, and we may feel excited and recharged by that.
That was Mandy Doria, a certified counselor at the University of Colorado, speaking with the Associated Press. That feeling of hope can dissipate amid day-to-day stressors, but there are ways to set goals without feeling like you're setting yourself up for failure, she told the AP.
There's a concept called SMART goals. So SMART goals should be specific. They should be measurable. They should be attainable. And they should be reliable, as well as time-based. So, for example, I might want to move my body more. And so I might start by going to the gym or going to yoga once a week. And then after 3 weeks, maybe I build on that. So I can make time-specific goals as well. And then it's measurable and it's specific.
Christine Whelan is a clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the author of Finding Your Purpose, an Audible original 10-lecture series.
New Year's resolutions are a cultural phenomenon, and it's really tempting to want to do them, right? So the best advice is to take a step back and ask why. Why is it that you want to make a change? These are questions of purpose and values and meaning. So maybe you do want to go to the gym and lose a couple pounds, but why? And if you can get to that core reason for why, research finds that you are much more likely to actually follow through on your goals and make it happen.
Whelan says there are other ways to start the new year by making it more of a reflective exercise rather than an intimidating to-do list.
Rather than New Year's resolutions, one thing that I've loved to do over the years is write a letter to myself at New Year's the next year. And in that letter, what I do is I think about where I want to be, where I am right now, the things that are important to me, my values and purpose statement, my hopes and goals for the year ahead.
Edward Hirth is a professor at the Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences at Indiana University. In an interview with the AP, he says, to be successful at sticking with a New Year's resolution, one must understand that pursuing a goal is a process.
Because I think most of the time in many goal pursuit situations, we're really hard on ourselves if we don't get where we anticipate we should be. If we can kind of break down the goal pursuit process into sub stages or sub, you know, kind of goals along the way, and can sort of see ourselves meeting those things and take pride in accomplishing those pieces of the larger process, it is much more reinforcing to us.
He says people should also reflect on their progress to see how far they've come rather than only focusing on the end point. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
To all our VOA listeners, you can now find International Edition back on our general website, voanews.com. There you will find other VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voanews.com, and thanks for listening. This has been VOA's International Edition. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our websites for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com and voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It has been more than 300 days since the beginning of Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. The United States is committed to ensuring that Ukraine is able to provide for and defend its citizens. In a meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, President Joe Biden reiterated U.S. support for Ukraine and the importance of fighting off the Kremlin's invading forces.
The American people have been with you every step of the way, and we will stay with you. We will stay with you for as long as it takes. What you're doing, what you've achieved, it matters not just to Ukraine, but to the entire world.
To that end, President Biden announced $374 million of additional humanitarian assistance to Ukraine through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID.
This will help provide food and cash assistance for more than 1.5 million Ukrainian people, as well as access to health care, safe drinking water, and help stay warm in the winter for more than 2.5 million Ukrainians.
In addition, President Biden also announced a $1.85 billion package in security assistance. The package includes both equipment and contracts to supply ammunition for artillery, tanks, and rocket launchers that will be used to defend Ukraine from Russian aggression. Also, the United States is working together with our allies and partners to provide critical equipment to help Ukraine make emergency repairs to their power transmission system and strengthen the stability of Ukraine's grid in the face of Russia's targeted attacks, said President Biden.
We should be clear about what Russia's doing. It is purposefully attacking Ukraine's critical infrastructure, destroying the systems to provide heat and light to the Ukrainian people during the coldest, darkest part of the year. Russia is using winter as a weapon, freezing people, starving people, cutting them off from one another.
The United States applauds Ukraine's bravery and resilience and is committed to ensuring the people of Ukraine survive the winter and Russia's unprompted aggression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.